You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Brown, Legal Brown, almost hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things we talk about for 50 minutes every afternoon. Posted earlier today a Facebook post kind of about what Breadbox Media is all about as we begin to embark on our expansion across the country, connecting with parishes, really trying to connect the unconnected. That's what it's about. Filling this void as I see it when it comes to a voiceless community that shows up on Ash Wednesday. They show up on Christmas and Easter, apparently, and we just don't do a good job really bridging all of that. I think Pope Francis, I think the voice he's speaking is authentic. He's trying to do that. We're going to talk about some of the things that he's proposing this afternoon. But really, this is the ethic I see as Catholic. Catholic is inclusive. It's universal. It's how do we bring everyone into a fold, and how do we do that effectively? That's the mission here. And again, if you're one of the many who have already discovered us and are enjoying this, what seems to be a breath of fresh air for many, if you enjoy this, then we ask that you share and invite others and welcome them. It's easy. It's an app. 10 seconds. Just share it with your friends, right? Let them know. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. We discuss that 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. So it looks like the Republicans are moving forward with a repeal and replace of Obamacare, including a defunding of Planned Parenthood. I think we've seen this coming for some time, and I think a lot of it stemmed really from the David Daleiden videos selling baby parts, the things that were revealed in that video. You've heard me talk about this. I don't have a problem with that video. I have no problem with that. You know, get in there and show the underbelly of this thing. That's fine. But as I said repeatedly, don't call yourself a journalist. Call yourself an activist, right? If as an activist, you do journalistic-esque things, but you're still an activist first, that's okay. Because what you're doing is like, oh, I'm going to be an undercover investigator here as a journalist. And what you really are is an activist. And you've got an agenda. There's no question. You're pushing this thing, and that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. I have no problem with that. What I have a problem with is saying that you're just doing journalistic things when you're doing activistic things. Be an activist. Absolutely. I love activists. I want you to be. just call it what it is, right? That's the thing. And I know that was confusing to many when I came out with a very blistering critique of this technique, of this. Well, and it really, what Daleiden did does not bother me. What he exposed needed to be exposed. The defense of saying that you're just a journalist, that's what bothered me. So I hope that's clear. I don't think it ever has been since I began speaking about this, because that was kind of an interesting turning point, I think, for many hearing me speak that way. And they're like, what the heck is, you know, I was assumed to be a pro Planned Parenthood guy, which is not the case at all. I think they're a disgusting, despicable organization that preys upon women. That's what I think. I don't think they're there to help a darn woman. One, I don't think that. They're there to make money off abortion. That's what they do. You can argue that all day long. Well, it's only 3%. Well, let's look at the real numbers here. We'll talk about that. But anyway, I want to see Planned Parenthood defunded. Yes. But at the same time, I want to see people have health care. I've heard all kinds of crazy things, just like we heard all kinds of crazy things about Obamacare. If you remember, oh, it's going to bankrupt the country. It's going to cause people to have to be forced into these plans that they're going to lose their doctors. They're going to do this and that and whatever, and they're not going to have the adequate care that they once had. And it's going to be socialism in the medical field. None of that happened. Now, what it did do, and I know this as a business owner, it raised my premiums by 30%. Absolutely did that. So because of the spread of healthcare, it caused some issues with me. Now, if I was fully cash flowing in my startup, I would absorb that and say, oh, geez, it's 30%. It's not a 30% increase of all my expenses, right? It's a 30% increase and something that is a smaller percentage of line item when it comes to me paying for health care for my employees, right? So that 30% I can absorb that. And don't let companies say it's going to bankrupt us. It's not, right? It's a non-issue now because we're changing it. But that mandate of coverage, most companies could absorb. People don't want to eat into their margins. I understand that. You're always trying to increase your margins and increase your sales and grow. I know business. I get it. But at the same time, if you're not willing to take care of people and take care of your employees, then there's a problem there as well. Now, you could point fingers at me and say, well, Leo, you got everybody on contract pay and you do part-timers and all that. Yeah, because I'm in startup. Let me get 10 years down the road. Let me get 5 years down the road. Let me get another year down the road and watch what will happen. Because I promise you, you're not going to find somebody who cares more about people in their environment than me. It may not always look like that. I bulldoze and I steamroll and I do all the things that business people do. But at the end of the day, I will sacrifice to make sure people are taken care of. I promise you. I will sacrifice to make sure people are taken care of. I've done it many times, and I will do it more. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that to put my light on the hill, right? To say, look, this is the way we do this. Let's take care of people. Let's make sure that they have what they need. Let's especially take care of people who are in the trenches, right? Let's especially take care of the people who are a part of this thing from the beginning. Let's make sure that that happens. So in all of this change, what we ultimately get is still a lot of unknown. And it's kind of, if you remember, there was this just ridiculous criticism. It may be founded to some degree. If you recall, when the health care was passed initially, 2011, 2012 timeframe, the Congress essentially said, led then by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, right? Were these the majority leaders basically saying that, let's just pass it and let's not worry about what's in there. Now, my criticism was it was passed without a single bipartisan vote. That to me seems like a problem. If we push something through that we can't find common ground on, that looks a little suspect to me. It looks like a steamroll then, right? It looks like it just got bulldozed through and nobody really found agreement that this makes sense to both sides. That should be a goal in legislation. It shouldn't be, well, we've got more members in Congress, therefore we could just push this through, which is what happened. That's what happened. And that was one of my criticisms. The other criticism I had was the mandate that we all pay for health care or be fined. That to me seemed a little bit unconstitutional. That was one of my biggest hangups. More so, I think, than even abortion coverage and this and that or whatever, because that was kind of getting played out in the courts, and there were some that already had openings like the Mennonites, and then Hobby Lobby got their win and all these things. And I'm saying, the problem is that we're being forced to pay for something that not everybody needs to pay for. That's kind of crazy. Doesn't really make sense. But ultimately, it seemed to be working because people were getting health care. And in the case that employers dropped their employees down to part-time so they didn't have to pay the additional premium costs, at least those who got dropped down could go into an exchange and they could go get health care. And it was a sliding scale and they could pay something that was very affordable or perhaps qualify for Medicaid. And that meant at least they've got health coverage. So if we're changing that now, especially with those who have pre-existing conditions and all of the things that this covered before, insured people were taken care of, if we're changing that in order to defund Planned Parenthood because we're so ardently against what Planned Parenthood is doing, what is the trade-off? What is the trade-off? Because especially as Catholics, we've got to look at this and go, wait the heck a minute, right? Wait a minute. What is this? Because moral decision-making, right? Look at moral decision-making, please. It's not whatever it takes to get to the goal. It's not that. It's not that at all. It's, is this all ethical, moral, and for the common good every step of the way? The intent, the object, the outcome, are all of these congruent? And if what we do in order to gain ground is somehow along the way discredit the dignity of others because we take something away from them that they did have and were benefiting from and now it's gone and now because you're working poor, you've got to work that much harder. That's crazy. It's just crazy. And again, the conservatism that I grew up with, maybe I got it wrong, right? Maybe I got it wrong because conservatism says to me, as I grew up with Ronald Reagan and Bush 41, when I came to an understanding really of politics, was that we are compassionate, caring, traditional individuals. We uphold a tradition that says we have a foundation of responsibility. Right? That's what I saw in conservatism. This responsible, stay the course, let's keep this thing focused, let's make this thing happen. Not the opposite of let's just throw wrenches into all the works and try to figure out what the heck may come out of it later, and if chips fall where they may, they fall where they may. That does not look like conservatism to me. And as I've said, I'm a center right, I think, for the most part, my entire political life, that's where I've been. I've never voted for a Democrat that I know of, but not that I would not if I found that the right Democrat who I felt was leading in that direction. But I think what we're seeing now, which is radical, It's not conservatism. It's not conservative. It's radical. It's major changes that could really result in problems for people down the road. Economic challenges for those who don't need any more challenges. I don't know that we've got the foresight, and we're trying to push something through in the very same way that Obamacare was pushed through that every conservative that I know of criticized because we're moving too fast on this. We don't even know. We haven't read the bill. Now we're doing the same thing. The double standard is staggering. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that for 50 minutes every afternoon. I want to ask for prayers for Letitia Adams, her podcast still available on our podcast page. She was with Breadbox Media in the very, very, very early incarnations, and possibly we'll have her back at some point. And I think what an amazing witness and a story to tell of her transformation. But certainly in a club now that no parent wants to be a member of, and that is a parent of a child who was lost to suicide. And this just happened in the past, I guess, day or so. And the strength that she has to share this story as she is chronicling this story through social media, I know it's healing and cathartic for her to do that. And to me, just a powerful witness of what it means to really be in this family, right, in this human family. And I think a lot of times we kind of close in on ourselves, lock up tight. Something of this nature would be a time where we would easily go and just try to heal our wounds without any exposure, almost a shame, right? Almost a real degree of shame that says, I have failed, therefore I can't even face my friends. I mean, I could see that. I mean, I know that's I say that because I know that's happened to others. But an amazing strength that we see in Letitia, and prayers continue to her for her son Anthony, who took his life, and the many people who are surrounding her now, family, friends, and all of those who are there for her as they comfort her again. Follow her on Facebook. I think she's a public figure there with a lot of blogging. She's a writer anyway. She is very, I was first introduced to her through her blogs, which just blew me away because I'm like, who is this honest? Whoever is willing to be this honest? Because my goodness, most of us hide so much, and she was revealing so much and staying true to her nature with what we're seeing now through this very difficult time of tragedy. So prayers again to her, blessings to the family for this situation. So now as we enter into a new arena of war, it appears now in Syria, with ground troops being placed in the middle of this really bizarre situation. And to me, I think this is going to be tough just to discern. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm no military strategist. What the heck do I know, right? But we seem to have about four different angles of politics being played there. So, you know, ISIS is just one that came in to capitalize on a situation. Just came in to say, here's an open opportunity, right? Here's a gaping hole that was left open in this world of rebel versus empire, right? It would be as if there would be a new player introduced into the Star Wars saga that now just wants to come in and set up shop and take as much share as they possibly can because they see the opportunity between two warring factions. That's what I see happening here. And I may be wrong. And then you've got other rebel groups that aren't in allegiance with either of the other three who are there. Again, kind of, it's this wild west of who's going to make the biggest impact and get the biggest, yeah, take the biggest stake. That's what it looks like. And I may be wrong, but I mean, my goodness, like I say, just looking at what I've seen in this continuing saga for so long now. I mean, you've got Russian influence, you've got American influence, you've got other countries who are supporting particular rebellions, or there are those who are undoubtedly, you know, ISIS has some sort of financial support certainly coming to them that is keeping them afloat and making this thing happen. And I'm not even sure we know all the tentacles of that. But we're in a really bizarre situation, and Marines are there and we'll see where this goes. But disturbing, even more so to me, if you can believe that, is this Marines Times magazine, online magazine piece that I posted on my Facebook page, talking about the very real challenges that have been a part of the Marines for a long time with mistreatment of women. And, you know, I know we had Donald Trump in the campaign trail with this nine-year-old video. Is that what it was? I think it came back 20, maybe. No. Not 9 years old. Was it 2011? Is that when it was done? So what? What is that? Six-year-old, right? I think that's right. Don't hold me to it. Anyway, it was a time when he was in this Access Hollywood interview, the correspondent Billy Bush on the bus, they're talking, and he says egregious things. He doesn't just say things like, wow, that chick was really hot, whatever, right? Which, yeah, dudes may talk that way to each other and say, oh man, she's smoking, whatever. And that, while you could say, well, that may be lustful, that's sinful, Leo, come on, what are you talking about? It's not predatory. It's not predatory to say something of that nature. It may be verging into, as Jesus says, adultery of the heart. It may be. It depends on how far you take it. I could say, I'd even say to my wife, wow, look at her. Wow, she's, you know, she's post these pictures of her team and beach body. I'm like, wow, she looks great. My goodness. Wow, she's smoking. Look at her transition. Yeah, I mean, and she knows I mean nothing. I'm not going to act on that, nor am I going to be predatory. She knows that. But when you talk about doing things to women in a particular fashion, in a graphic fashion, which I don't say, nor do I think, when I'm there with my wife looking at these women that she shows me, look at this transfer. Oh, my goodness, man, she looks great. Wow. Look at that. Smoking. Whatever, right? Way, way, way different. Way different than talking about grabbing women in their private parts. Way different. And also way different than posting nude pictures, doing egregious things to women, this rape culture that seems to be part, perhaps, of some military, whatever. And I'm not saying all the military is bad, but this was an expose. It was asking these questions. Are we beyond this? Are we in a new era where we can actually have true autonomy as women in the military? Now, my wife, speaking of my wife, ex-military, she came through the Army with a service during the time of the original Gulf War, Iraq War. Right out of college, she enlisted and did her 4 years of military service. And she says to this day was the best time of her life, and that she didn't have any weird experiences or ever felt threatened, or, you know, I mean, she was just, and even I have met many of those that she came through the military with, because there have been reunions and I've been able to, and she stays in touch with many of her military friends. And as it seems, everything on the up and up. So there's that, right? There's that anecdotal experience that my wife has had. And then there's these egregious stories of things that are just degrading to women. And again, I get when dudes get together, men will be men. Yes, but, right? I think I shared earlier in the week, I did this, you know, attended this evangelical men's conference last Saturday, and it was a Friday night, Saturday, and it was a men's men thing, right? And even to the point of telling some jokes that were a little bit off color that you normally would not hear in a church, let's say. But still,
you know, all innocent. I mean, completely, but still being able to go, hey, you know what? We're real men. And we have a particular type of language, a particular type of externality, and nothing that was degrading to women, I assure you that, nothing that was remotely verging into objectification, not even close, not even in that territory, not even in that ballpark, right? I mean, I think I shared that there was this video of crutch shots, right, of men getting hit in the groin. And it's funny. It's funny, even though we know it just we were laughing, of course, because it's funny stuff when those things happen. And we're like, oh, but at the same time, like, I mean, you know, it's not objectification, and it's not making people it's certainly not degrading women. So is there a problem? Apparently so. And are we beyond it? We hope. I don't know. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things we talk about for 50 minutes every afternoon. So, as we've talked about what Breadbox Media is in the sense of this understanding of a Catholic worldview that says, you know, there's a way of looking at things. And when you understand how to look at things, now you can see things for what they truly are. Right? This is what Father Thomas Loya and I talk about all the time. It's theology of the body glasses, as he talks about it. If you understand the ethic of how to see, right? How to see authentically, then we can really begin to discern, and we can really begin to say, okay, what is the best decision? Because if you see things a certain way, you're going to make decisions based on that view, that vision that you have. You're going to make decisions that will continue leading down that path, right? If you don't have that vision, if you don't have that worldview, if you don't have that guidance, that very definitive ethic, you're going to be all over the map. Now, you're going to make decisions that could potentially appear to be contradictory to the outside because of this, because there are some who have a portion of the vision. They have a myopic point of the vision. They see maybe 3 inches in front of them. There are others that may see 3 feet in front of them. But the Catholic worldview sees beyond the horizon, right? They see the infinite vision. Now, there are those who think they're in that world who say, yeah, right? There's a reaction when somebody comes along with this worldview that really is far-reaching, which is what Pope Francis has done since the day he took the papacy. Not that other popes have not. It's just for whatever reason, Pope Francis has had this reaction, this bizarre shaking up of Catholics. Now, here's the difference. Pope Francis is not coming in as a disruptor. Not at all. He's coming in as a revealer, right? What he's doing is revealing the truth of the Church's ethic, which has always been in play. But when he says things that freak people out, it seems to be that he's disrupting something. He's not. He's not challenging the systems of the Church, right? We got a president right now who's challenging the very systems, and I think even the constitutional underpinnings of this country. That's what I believe. I promise you,
Pope Francis is not doing that within the church, but there are those who think that, because now he's saying, yeah, we could pave the way for men who are married to be priests. What? Right? And people freak out. What's he doing? There he goes. Throwing a wrench into the works again. No. Because we've always had that path. There's always been that path. When a minister converts to the Catholic Church, he has the open, and I can't remember the actual, there's a terminology for this, where someone can easily transition into the priesthood, especially if they've had a particular degree of seminary training. And, you know, it's not a standard. You've got to do this. It's like, okay, well, you're pretty much there. Okay, we'll get you ordained pretty quickly. That happens. Not to mention that there are deacons who were married, whose wives pass away and they become priests. I know it's a little bit different dynamic, but there have been precedent. There has been a precedent for this in the church forever. But to say now there could be the opportunity for men who are married to become priests after they're married, and there's a deal, right? So choosing the path of celibacy and going that route and doing that is one thing, but for priests who are married, for men who are married to become priests, has been another thing altogether. Now, the one thing that we've had so far is that even with married priests stepping into service in the priesthood, to my knowledge, they have not been pastors, meaning they're the ones kind of in charge at the parish level running the show, because they need availability. Their greatest ability is availability. That's why they're single men who can devote their entire lives to that parish, because they are going to get called in the middle of the night. They're going to be at the hospital doing last rites. They're going to be anointing the sick. They've got to change their schedule on a dime because something comes up that requires their attention. That's tough for a guy with a family, right? Because you've got your family time that you've got to devote to your family. You've got to be there. And you can't be pulled away at every moment. You're on a date night with your wife, finally, after months of not being able to spend time together. And oh my goodness, I got to head to the church. You know, not good, not a good dynamic. And study this. If you want to look at the stats that are out there, there's a horrific divorce rate among non-Catholic clergy because they're married. Married clergy, it's tough. And women and families feel abandoned all the time because they perceive that the church is more important than the family. And it happens constantly. Not a good dynamic. So I would hope, I would certainly hope. I love this. I think it's great. I would be interested myself, quite frankly. But I think that there has to be a clear delineation that says, you're here on Sunday to administer sacraments, but we're going to preserve your time to make sure that, you know, I mean, in this priesthood, it could easily be a diaconate sort of process, right? That you're devoting this time in evenings, weekends, whatever, a long track to the priesthood. It could be 10 years, who knows? To make sure that you get the proper training, everything is where it needs to be, from philosophy and theology and moving on through the seminary studies to the point of ordination. And at which point you now can serve as a priest, but not with everything all in full time, 100% pastorship. I think that that would need to be preserved. And I still think, even with that, you're going to find the men who are called to a life of celibacy who are going to embrace that and realize that they want to be pastors. They want to move on to positions of bishop and cardinals and be real leaders in the church. They're going to have that call from a very young age, and they're going to know that that's what their trajectory is, at which point they'll remain in the traditional path of the priesthood. But this isn't a disruptive concept. It's not something that says, oh no, we've lost our moral footing. The compass is spinning, right? We have no true north. We've lost it all. Here we go. Hell to hell in a handbasket. We are hellbound now on the road to perdition because of this Pope making this off-the-cuff proclamation. I hear that constantly. I hear that constantly being where I am, listening to the people I hear, getting emails from people who want to inform me just how wrong we are. When I say we, those who embrace and actually acknowledge Pope Francis as Pope, right? Because apparently not everybody does, right? I mean, there's the group of Sedevacantists grew under Pope Francis in ways that I think some faithful Catholics never imagined that they would find themselves at odds. But what are you seeing? Are you seeing 2 feet in front of you, 20 feet? Or are you really seeing the infinite horizon of where this is going? Because we're on the path, we're on the trajectory. And my goodness, three. I think there are three primary factors right now that would change everything about our church. First off, what Pope Francis, and they're all things that Pope Francis has mentioned, but if we could implement these things quickly and get them moving, fast track annulments happening on the parish level with the parish priest, with the pastor, internal forum, getting people completely convalidated in their marriages. Bam, get that done. Women entering into the diaconate. Get that done. Married men entering into the priesthood. You do those three, you're going to see a dynamic shift in the church where people go, wow, now we're talking. And you won't have to worry about the gay marriage thing, which we're not going to do. We're going to love our homosexual brothers and sisters and love them where they are with whatever they've got going on. We're going to love them, or we're going to guide them, or we're going to help them, and we're going to direct them toward an authentic lifestyle. That's what we're going to do. But we're not going to embrace this sacramentally. It can't be. Simply can't be. And that's not a prohibition or any sort of degradation to them. It isn't what it is. It's not matter, form, and we got to keep that straight. But married priests, precedent. Women deacons, precedent. The thing that we got to work on now is getting this internal forum moving quickly on the annulments. Bam, we got healing on so many levels happening there. We won't be able to keep the droves of individuals out of the church. Be amazing. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.